everybody get ready for Foodie and the Beast with David and Nikki Nellis. A foodie born and bred, my wife Nikki loves chatting up chefs, dining out, and insider industry buzz.
And my husband David thinks a great meal is nothing but a good burger, a frosty brew, and a check for under $20. Because he is cheap.
Well, maybe so, but Foodie married Beast anyway, and together we've got the Food and Wine Variety Show that has everyone talking.
It's Foodie and the Beast, and we are on now.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to Foodie and the Beast with David and Nikki Nellis on a bright, sunny, cloudy, crappy day here in D.C. We have a great show. Tune in to Facebook Live.
You have to let me talk as well.
Go ahead, talk. What do you want to say?
No, I have nothing to say.
Well, then why do you want to talk? Tune into Facebook Live. Go to at Nikki Nellis, N-Y-C-C-I, Nellis. And you can watch. We got a lot of people in the studio and a great show. Want to mention two quick things. We have a new sponsor, and they're open. Brasserie Liberté opened up in Georgetown.
I feel like you're saying it wrong.
And they open.
No, Liberté.
Liberté. That and Pâté en Croûte are the only French.
Yes, I know, but they're not in here yet.
Okay, anyways. So check out Café Liberté has a great menu. They're open at 8 in the morning for breakfast.
Breakfast, lunch, and dinner.
There. And want to quickly mention that we had dinner at Reverie in Georgetown. Johnny Sparrow's the chef owner there, and it was spectacular.
It was. We had a lovely evening. The wine list is really wonderful.
And the steak is to
delicious.
Die for. All right, so today's show, Jill Erber's back with us. She and her husband, Jeff, are the owners of Cheesteak. They've got a new space. They moved a couple of doors down in Shirlington, and it's gorgeous. And we ate there, and we had a great time.
We did.
And we had good food, great wine list. So RAMW's DC Cocktail Week is back. We got all the details for you. And Harley Mocker is one of the participants. He's with Karma Indian. He's in to tell us about a special cocktail he's cooked up for it. Reed Schilling and Sarah Quinteros Schilling, are in Schilling Canning Company. It's a mid-Atlantic restaurant down in the Yards. It's a great little place, and we're going to hear you'll hear all about it.
I mean, you haven't been there, but it is a great little place. You have not been there.
Oh, that's what you say.
Because
okay.
You haven't.
I have. Reed, have I been there?
No.
You have not.
Nice try.
I'm just messing with everybody.
I know.
All right.
Darling.
Okay, so an age-old tradition in French charcuterie is pâté en croûte. It's like a pie crust. It's kind of a meat pie baked in a pastry, and it sounds easy, but it's not. And
it doesn't sound easy.
Well, it sounds easy to me.
Easy.
It sounds easy to eat. But when it comes to major pâté en croûte competitions around the world, it's usually the French who dominate. But not this year. American-born Christian Welsh he's the chef de cuisine at Kingbird in the Watergate. Is the 2019 North American champion of pâté en croûte, and he's in with his mentor, Kingbird's executive chef, and a Frenchman, of course, Sebastien Giannini. And I got to find out why he's got an Italian last name, but we'll find that out.
You already found that out the last time he was in studio.
I'm going to ask him again. The Good Life Behind Bars is a drink segment. We've got we've peppered the show with it. It's all about black bartenders and the history of black bartenders and what they have brought to the bartending and spirit scene. Paul Gonzalez, who's the manager bartender at Allegory at the Eaton Hotel, Al Thompson, who's bar director at Hanuman, and Capri Robinson, who is DC's 2017 cocktail queen and founder of Chocolate City's Best and a bartender at Reliable Tavern. They're all in to mix up drinks for us. And speaking of mixing up things, we're going to bring in Central Farm Markets now and Mitch Berliner to talk about good, healthy produce and stuff.
Well, not only that, it's Thanksgiving. So,
it is Thanksgiving.
Mitch, are you all ready?
Thank you.
You're all ready for Thanksgiving?
I am ready. Thanks for this. You got to thank you for the segue, kids, because the Central Farm Markets are definitely your Thanksgiving headquarters. You better hurry up and order your turkeys and roasts and all that stuff. We've got all kinds of specialty pies and cakes. We even have pumpkin hummus for the holidays.
Pumpkin hummus?
Is it good? Pumpkin,
yes, it is.
Would he tell you about it if it wasn't good?
I thought,
sometimes people tell me about things that are not good.
It sounds a little weird.
It does sound a little weird.
It did sound a little weird, but it was not overpowering.
Okay.
So just a hint of the pumpkin pie seasonings in there, and it actually was surprisingly tasty.
Cool.
And then, of course, we've got great things for stuffing your we've got apples, pears, and oysters for your stuffings. We've got cornbreads and all kinds of other breads. We've got fabulous sides. You could start your meal with cheese and meat crafted charcuterie. Big assortment, like you said, of vegetables still. Apples, pears, Asian pears, and first week of persimmons.
We've never had oysters and stuffing, but that sounds really good.
It's a New England thing.
By the way,
do that.
Yes, it's also been a big tradition on the eastern shore of Maryland.
Oh, is that true?
To stuff ham. Yeah, stuff hams with the cornbread and oysters.
Oh, my God.
And turkey. Yes, and it does. And, of course, we've got plenty of your beverage options as well. We've got apple cider, cranberry apple cider, local distilleries, breweries, and of course, nothing's better on a cold day than a hot apple cider with your favorite bourbon.
That's true.
So,
like an apple cider hot toddy kind of thing, right?
Exactly, mm-hmm. exactly. And so we have all of this stuff at all of our farm markets, and so we're placing orders. You can go online, and we have our holiday brochure at centralfarmmarkets.com, and you can see all the offerings. And you can order them directly and quickly just come and pick them up.
All right, boss. Great. Quickly tell everybody where the markets are.
You betcha. We have Pike and Rose every Saturday, and it's seasonal, so but we are still open for another week. And then we have our year-round markets in Northern Virginia. We have Nova right near Tyson's Corner on the parking lot of George C. Marshall High School on Route 7 and in our flagship 12-year-old market now, Central Farm Market in Bethesda on the Bethesda Central on the Bethesda Elementary School parking lot.
That all right.
CentralFarmMarket.com.
All right, Mitch. Thanks so much. Bye. You know, that's what I call you.
What?
My hot toddy. Okay. All right. So, Paul Gonzalez, step up to the plate. Where are you?
Hi.
Hey,
so, how are you, Paul?
I'm
so.
Tell us a little bit about Allegory. It's this little tucked in the back of the hotel. It's so pretty at Eaton, obviously.
Yep.
Tell us a little bit about it and this new promotion that you all are doing.
Yeah, so we've been open for about 14 months now. It is a mostly literary themed bar.
Mm-hmm.
It is in the back of the Eaton Hotel on the first floor. Behind the books is what we always like to say.
Mm-hmm.
And then the project that we're doing right now, it's called Black News. It's in conjunction with Khalil Joseph, who's a artist who's doing an exhibit right in the lobby.
Mm-hmm.
The art project itself is going to consist of two different TVs. And the first one focuses mostly on historic black imagery. The second one is going to focus more on modern day black imagery. So when you look at them together, it has like a deeper meaning.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
So, yeah, it was fun.
So then you decided to do a feature on
So basically I was
bartenders.
It's funny. So me, Deke, Jackson, all of us, we basically do a little bit of everything. So some days we supervise, some days we bartend, some days we host.
Mm-hmm.
It was like one day that one of us was outside hosting while they were setting up the exhibit when I was asking them kind of like, you know, what their thought process was behind it because it seemed really interesting. And they were explaining it to me, how like they tie the two images together to make a deeper one. I was like, that's kind of like an allegory. So we, loosely. So
sounds more like an alligator to me. But
so we really wanted to do something with them and, you know, do things. Our hotel is doing so many great activations and so mm-hmm. many unique things that it's great to be a part of it where we can tie in drinking. So it's not just like your average
So
hotel,
what's going to be
bar.
Featured on this?
It's going to have five pre-prohibition bartenders and five modern-day bartenders
mm-hmm.
With their bios and the drinks that kind of made them famous.
Great.
And then the really cool thing about it is that as far as the historical goes, there wasn't as many. Obviously, it's representing black bartenders throughout
mm-hmm.
that didn't get a say because a lot of the people that were—
Right, they took—
Yeah.
They took it over. I understand.
Well, we're going to come back and learn more. But quick question. Is there a little takeaway from this with their bios and some of their bar recipes?
Okay. I mean, a lot of them are really, really pertinent. There's one, Dick Francis, who is a local D.C. bartender, for instance. Amazing mm-hmm. story. He bartended before, during, and after the Civil War.
Cool.
All right. Well, we're going to hear more about that
in
a second.
Okay, so what are you making first?
The first one we're going to be doing is going to be by Al Thompson. It's mm-hmm. going to be called Tears of a Thousand Swords.
Mm-hmm.
Really nice, like tiki rum style.
That's how I describe my marriage.
Mm-hmm. I'm number three, by the way, if you want to know why.
Marriages. Sorry.
Okay.
Oh, they're making 3,000 swords.
Okay, great.
All right.
While you're making that,
Jill Erber. Now, I've resisted talking about the big cheese and the cheesiest and all that, but Cheese Teak is a great concept.
Thank you.
Why don't you quickly give everybody kind of a overview of how you got to where you are? Because you didn't start out in cheese.
I did not start out in cheese. So my background is actually in computer science, and I moved to Northern Virginia to work in software development about 20 years ago. And one thing led to another.
Did you drip Velveeta on your keyboard? And
no, you know, I was a casualty of the dot-com bubble bursting back in about 2001 is what happened. Yes. Again, a number of sort of serendipitous steps from there. And I ended up opening Cheese Teak, which 15 years ago was just a teeny tiny
little cheese shop. Teak in Delray.
Right, exactly. We didn't even carry wine when we first opened. It was just cheese and charcuterie.
But what was really interesting about it is that you sort of opened, you opened in Delray, you opened in a place that was just starting to, you know, build a more of a community with small little retail, small little restaurants, and you were the first real cheese shop, independently owned cheese shop in the DC market, period.
Yes. And when I would tell people what I was going to be opening, there would be kind of a double take. They would be like, you're opening a what?
Well, that
shop?
Was back when a restaurant would come on because they had a cheese cave. And everybody was like, a cheese cave?
What is a cheese cave?
You had a whole cheese store.
People thought for about 6 months that I was opening a tea shop because nobody could even conceptualize that there would be an entire store.
Like you had a speech impediment?
Dedicated. Yeah. Cheese. They were like, maybe she said tea because cheese can't possibly be a whole store.
Right.
That's how it all
and
came
then
about.
How did you... So. Now here we are, 15 years later, yep. Mazel Tov, by the way.
Thank you.
So how did you expand? How did you take, because it's not easy for a small independent woman to take her shop and, grow it out.
Right. So the way that we grew, and I like to think it's the way we continue to grow, was really by the demands that we heard from our guests. So we transitioned from being just a retail shop carrying cheese to the first step was carrying wine because our guests said, oh, it doesn't make sense that I can't get wine here. So we started carrying wine. Then we added the restaurant a little over 10 years ago because people wanted a place to gather and enjoy the cheese and the wine as a group together. And they were always disappointed that they had to just take everything home. And so we added the restaurant to accommodate that request.
Which is a real change in concept,
Because
you go from really just being a retailer to being a restaurant. I mean, it's totally two different concepts.
Well, I'm sure your husband and muse, Jeff, had the...
Yes.
It was his fault. why don't we take a break early so we can really have some time to talk about the new place.
All right. This is David and Nikki Nellis. We have Cheese Teak in studio. They have a new place. We'll be back in just a sec.
All right, so you heard the Brasserie Liberté promo spot before they opened, but they opened 2 days ago. You can go there in Georgetown right now, right next door to Café Milano, and it's a blast.
Yep.
So let's get back to Jill Erber and Cheese Teak, but Jeff, the silent muse, is about to pop some champagne.
Go ahead. It's on. Don't worry. And Andy's going to take care of you,
look
Jeff.
Look at that. No arm strength.
There we go. Yay. All right, party in the studio.
All right, so
over there too,
Jill, let's talk about the new restaurant in Shirlington.
Sure.
We were there. You basically moved about five storefronts up the block.
Yeah.
But it's...
I know, but it's a totally different look.
Yes.
It has been fully transformed. Absolutely. So we opened the first Shirlington location about eight years ago. And a couple years ago, we had the opportunity to relocate because our landlord wanted to put in a new tenant where we were located, but didn't want to lose us in the property. So offered to
They've been very, very supportive.
And so we were able to, which is very fortunate for a restaurant doing a build out, we were able to maintain our existing location and operate there while doing the build out. So we literally were closed for 36 hours between the two places.
That's insane.
It was insane.
I can't even imagine.
It was like a billion ants just carrying things
back and forth.
Don't say ants in association with a restaurant. It's a bad idea.
Right. Okay. Exactly. Elephants.
Elephants
carrying things back.
So how did you decide to update the restaurant and change your offerings?
So we tried to, we had a very unique opportunity after all of these years to take into account sort of all the lessons that we had learned for good and for bad over all of our years of operation and things we had been hearing from our guests over the time and from our employees. And this was the first time we really were able to build a space from scratch with exactly the vision, you know, that we had from the beginning.
What a luxury.
It was a luxury, I have to say.
I bet.
Fantastic.
And so, what I like I mean, you know, each of us would like to, the lighting is terrific. The lighting is perfect.
Thank you.
I like that, I mean, that whole kind of, it's really a glass window wall out onto the, you know, and the front is glass, but on the side makes the space seem so much bigger.
It does.
And the idea of having booths that aren't booths with big fluffy chairs and pillows for, you know.
But let's talk about the kind of things you're offering there, because aside from a full menu and a full wine list, a full bar.
Yes.
And now you, I mean, I know you probably always had this at your other stores, but there's really like a big gift area.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? Like packing a basket, whether it's for somebody else or for yourself, it's really, really well curated.
Well, thank you. What we really strive to do, and again, it's always a work in progress, but we try to capture every possible experience that a guest could want when they come into our space. So everything from if they want to have dinner or lunch or brunch, if they want to shop and bring things home for their family or friends, if they're doing an event and want it catered or bring things home, if they want to do a private event in the store, we do the cheese classes. So all of these things are kind of tied together to create one unifying experience. For the guest is a great way for them to have lots of different experiences in one place.
I mean,
well, can we?
We haven't really talked about the full range of cheeses that you have there, and that's really, it's unbelievable. I happen to be, I told your husband earlier today that I think my body is about 85% cheese.
Yes, as it should be.
As it should be. But I mean, you've got, really, you've got something from everywhere in the world there. So why don't you give us an idea of that?
So one thing we always try and explain to people is just the myriad cheeses that there are in the world. Every color, texture, every milk type, everything that you could imagine. I remember when I first opened 15 years ago and my mother came into the shop. And I don't know, at that point, I think I had 50 cheeses or something, which now is like tiny compared to what we have. But I remember her standing in front of the cheese case and kind of holding her chest like this and saying, I had no idea there were this many cheeses in the whole world. And I've always tried to remember that as I'm doing anything, is that so many people, their experience with cheese like this is the first one they have is when they come into Cheesteak. And we want to make it easy and fun for them.
Right. Well, and I love that. So how many cheeses would you say are in the new shop?
In the new shop, we have probably about 150, I'd say.
From all over the world?
All over the world. All over
is
the world.
Is there one cheese or is there one place in the world that you found a cheese that you like that you're like, I can't believe this cheese is from here?
You know what? I'll be honest. There's one that I love right now that we're getting from Missouri, of all places. And the reason I love it is because it's a woman cheesemaker at this teeny tiny little farm called Green Dirt Farm. And Missouri, of all places, is not somewhere you think of as being a cheese hub. And she just makes the most beautiful little works of art. And everyone is
goat,
sort of hand wrapped. She does mostly sheep, which is also makes it very, very unique. So there's soft, ripened sheep's milk cheeses, which you almost never find anywhere. And so it's a very brave thing that this woman is doing in the middle of Missouri. It's just really cool.
Well, tell us quickly what you brought in today.
Sure.
Because for people who don't know, you can follow Jill on Instagram at Cheesteak, and she does these fabulous videos of how to put together a cheese board, which I think is super, super helpful.
And it's beautiful. Give us a quick rundown. It's
great. So what we're celebrating today, we're kind of rolling all these things into one. So we're celebrating 15 years of Cheesteak. We're celebrating the new location. And we're also celebrating the upcoming holidays. So we tried to do kind of a decadent spread here of all super creamy, gooey, unctuous cheeses, but sort of surprising milks. So we have cow's milk.
I know unctuous is a term people use when they describe cheese.
It's the
cheese.
Best word
Dickens
ever.
Dickens used it to describe Uriah Heep. Did you know that?
I feel like people not in the food world do not hear that in a positive light.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Oh, to me, it's all good. Okay, so unctuous to me is runny and stretchy and sort of voluptuous. And just this incredible velvety texture that you just want to spread and smear on something.
Okay, that sounds good to me.
So really, really wonderful and creamy. We have a cow's milk cheese called Chouars from France. We have a goat's milk cheese. Again, anything soft ripened that is not cow's milk is pretty rare. So this is a goat's milk cheese actually from Maryland. Yay.
Oh.
From Firefly Farms, which is called Merry Goat Round. I'm a cheese punster, so I love that name. And then third, we have another cheese from France called Brebis Rousse, which means red sheep. And it is also a soft ripened cheese and very, very
gooey. We got a real Frenchman back here, so just be sure.
My pronunciation is so terrible. I can't even look at you right now. So,
but I will say, given just to talk about the puns, they do run rampant. Yes, I know. I know what's happening.
Okay.
They do run rampant throughout Cheesteak. So you have this fabulous,
yes.
Like, portrait of Napoleon where he's supposed to be on the horse, but instead it's on a cow.
Yes.
It's really adorable.
It's, it's one of my favorite features it's for really sure.
Cool. A little trompe l'oeil. You have to look for it to know it. And I definitely didn't say that correctly either. So
everyone's like,
all right, tell everybody where they can find you, please.
So we have three locations currently. We have our original in the Delray location of Alexandria. Mm-hmm. We are in the Shirlington neighborhood of Arlington and also in the Mosaic district of Fairfax. That's our newest location, about a year old now.
Fantastic. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much.
And in a couple weeks, Jill is coming in studio on Industry Night, our other radio show, where we'll be talking with her and other cheesemakers just about the industry in general. I'm really looking forward to that conversation. It's
going
to be a lot of fun. Okay, next, where are we going?
We're going to Al Thompson. Al, step up to the bar there. Al's a bar director at Hanuman, and I watched you fire up this thing. Tell us about this drink. This is crazy.
Great. So the cocktail that you're having is called Tears from a Thousand Swords. It's a cocktail based upon the Caribbean. You guys know the Caribbean was colonized.
But why a Tears from a Thousand Swords?
Well, so the Caribbean was colonized by Europe, right? And the gun was invented in 1503. So when Columbus came to this side of the world, he was using swords and not guns. So it's Tears from a Thousand Swords. Natives died, Europeans died, Africans died. So tears, right?
Excellent. Sad. So. Very. Well, it is sad. But now what did you put in the drink to make us happy?
Great. Good segue.
Yeah,
so in the cocktail.
I'm very good at, I've been doing
the
this
queen
a long time.
Segues,
right. So in the cocktail, some aged rum, Appleton, some pineapple, cinnamon, which are Caribbean, allspice, ginger, lime.
And how are you sort of participating in what's going on at Allegory? Like, what's happening? I know they're going to make your drink for you.
They've been making my drink. They've been doing a great job. Thank you, guys. So what's happening at Allegory is they're doing a Black News exhibit. And at that exhibit, along with the exhibit, these guys have chosen five contemporary bartenders that are, you know, doing well, I guess, in the city. I'm one of them, along with Capri, Lauren, AJ, Dwayne, all those people. So they're making cocktails from hundreds of years ago from other famous Black bartenders, and then they're pairing that with our cocktails. So it's kind of a dichotomy of like the past and the present. So
I love it. All right, great. Well, thank you for coming in and sharing it. That's amazing.
All right.
So on top of this fabulous cocktail promotion that's going on at Allegory at Eaton, what's the matter?
Nothing.
Oh, you made a lot.
Just stumbled over fabulous. So
okay.
I thought you'd had too much to drink already.
You must be perfect. So hard.
I am perfect, aren't I?
Anyway.
Come on. Yes, they're nodding. Yeah,
right. That's because they're not married to you. It's DC Cocktail Week, which is every November, and it's really a cool promotion that the Restaurant Association of Metropolitan Washington does every year. And I think a lot of people kind of wonder why they do it. But right before Thanksgiving, people seem to sort of withdraw from restaurants, right? They're like, we're going to be eating a lot. There's a lot of food that's going to be happening. It's a lot of family, et cetera, and so on. And honestly, this is a time more than ever where you need to go and have a drink. You need to prep. You need to get ready for all that's coming towards you. And the DC restaurant scene is ready to hit you up with that, because not only are they doing cocktails, but it's a cocktail and bite pairing, which is, I think, super smart and super fun. Do you want to introduce our guest?
Well, Harley, you ready?
Absolutely.
Thank you. All right, Harley Mocker is, are you the bar director?
Yes.
All right, at Karma Indian. Tell us a little bit about the restaurant and then what you're doing for Cocktail Week.
Karma Modern Indian's going on about 2 years now.
Right in the mic.
Sorry.
You're on
just
radio,
started.
Dude.
Okay, you can move it towards you.
Thanks.
There you go.
Yeah. So they're going on 2 years now. It's kind of a twist on Indian cuisine where they utilize fairly modern ingredients, so things that you wouldn't traditionally see in Indian food.
Mm-hmm.
So you're going to have bronzino, lobster, things of that nature that you would normally not see around D.C.
And so how does that showcase itself in your cocktails?
So the cocktails, I use a lot of actually Italian ingredients because I find that the bold flavors in Italian ingredients stand up to the Indian cuisine
Benissimo.
Fairly well. Exactly. So in this, I'm making you guys a Boulevardier.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be Angel's Envy bourbon because we carry a really extensive list of bourbon, whiskeys, scotches. And then the vermouth in that is actually Cochi.
Good.
Thank you.
Cochi
Americano Rosso.
Mm-hmm.
Because the Gentian is a little stronger in that, you're going to have a more herbaceous quality.
Mm-hmm.
It can stand up to some of the fuller flavors.
My problem with bourbon, or any of the whiskeys, is that, you know, they can, like, take the paint off your tongue. This, the vermouth cuts the...
Absolutely.
Man, this is good.
Vermouth's coming in at about, you know, 16% alcohol, so you're not going to ruin your palate with it. It's really only just going to enhance it.
I didn't know until we started doing this show that vermouth is really wine, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Absolutely. It's basically...
Look at Jill. Jill was impressed.
She's like, did you know that?
She's looking at me, she's like, Jeff, why don't you know that? But I mean, yeah, and so it cuts the... This is delicious.
Absolutely, yeah.
So are you doing a bite with this? Is the chef doing a bite? What is the bite?
It's going to be seared scallops over roasted red peppers or our Nareal chili prawns, both of which are not traditionally things that are going to be cooked in Indian cuisine, so it kind of showcases the twist that we bring to things.
Nice.
One's pretty spicy, the other's not, so it's open to everybody.
And have you guys participated in DC Cocktail Week before?
We have, yeah.
And was it a worthwhile promotion for you?
It is. It's a lot of fun. It brings people in who wouldn't otherwise be coming in and, you know.
I know, people get really into it, right?
They really do.
They, like, go to all the different restaurants.
They try and hit every stop. Right. Yeah, it's fun to be on that list.
It makes sense. All right, make sure everybody knows where the restaurant is.
Absolutely. Karma Modern Indian is at 611 I Street, Northwest D.C. We're right by the Gallery Place Chinatown Metro.
And before we take a quick break, just to wrap up the D.C. Cocktail Week sort of segment here, there are some events going on in and around the area aside from all the restaurants that you can go to who are participating. So tomorrow, Monday, November 18th, there is a happy hour at the Fainting Goat that includes complimentary tastings from the Virginia Distilling Company. And Dos Mamis is going to be doing an event on Tuesday, November 19th. And on Wednesday, there's a happy hour at Royal that includes tastings from Catoctin Creek. So lots of deliciousness happening around the city this week with DC Cocktail Week.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks so much. This is Nikki Nellis and David Nellis. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a sec.
Oh, we're back on Fooding the Beast with David and Nikki Nellis. Let's talk more about the good life behind bars. Capri Robinson is here.
Hi.
You were DC's 2017 cocktail queen. I don't even know what that means. Was it an all-women?
Yes, okay, all-women all right. Competition, yes.
All right, and you're at Reliable Tavern.
I'm at Reliable Tavern, yes.
And you're participating in this thing at Allegory. So tell us about your participation.
The crew at Allegory came to me and told me that they had this idea, of course, with Black News that you all have been hearing about, and asked me if I wanted to be a part and also teach a class along with this. And I was, of course, saying yes. Any exposure for people of color behind the bar, I want to be a part of. I think this is just a great opportunity to get people understanding the history of Black people in the industry and how far back that goes. I'll be
talking. Kind of sounds like there's a book there if somebody wants to take the initiative.
I think we're starting to get that together.
You know what's really interesting? So a couple of weeks ago, thank you, on our other show, Industry Night at the Line Hotel, I featured all the Black distillers.
Awesome.
And it was a really cool conversation. So
absolutely.
Do you know Chanel with Foudre?
Yes,
Vodka?
I do.
Okay, so
I do.
She's a force, right?
Yes.
What's with Chanel, Capri? I got to get a new name.
Yes, you do.
Name is so mundane.
Anyway, so I think that there's some sort of possibly like some sort of collab there that could really happen because it is really hard for people of color to get into the distilling industry.
Mm-hmm.
The money is just not as available.
Absolutely.
Do you know what I mean? So like I feel like there's some sort of something that could happen there that makes
yes.
a lot of sense.
And Chanel also does a great job with Black Wine and Food and Wine Festival,
which
is
really
awesome.
Earlier this
Chanel,
year.
Yes. Chanel is a machine.
Yeah.
She's
she
involved
came
in more
earlier,
stuff.
Right,
yeah.
Like she's
amazing.
Incredible. Right.
Yeah.
So now what's your class going to be like? What are you doing?
Today I'll be talking about hospitality as a whole. So just something that go back towards so people can understand, again, what we're doing and the reason why we are hospitable and what that comes with. And also kind of talking about unconscious bias and what that does and how that affects hospitality and what that and kind of how to, you know, recheck the consciousness and see how to better treat people and to have a better environment in your establishment.
But don't you feel like it's for both? Right? Like a better...
Absolutely.
A better customer and a better server. Do you
Absolutely.
Know what I mean? Like it's got to... Like everybody needs to be sort of more kind
across
the board.
Yeah. One of the things I'm going to bring up today is about eye contact and what that means when you walk into the building.
Now we're all making
eye
contact.
Yeah.
Now we're like all into it. We're like, I'm looking at you.
Especially when you take a shot, right? Everyone's always like, eye contact. And you're like, okay, I got this. So we have to start recognizing each other as people again. And I think that's something that needs to be talked about.
All right.
I love it. And I'm loving that you're getting the opportunity to do so.
Thank you.
So
I appreciate it.
What are we
got to go quickly.
Yes.
Tell us about your drink.
So that's the Nella Fossa. That cocktail got me a trip to Italy, which was amazing.
Oh my God.
That you're going to have a little bit of lemon juice. You're going to have sour cherry gin by Luxardo. Luxardo's bitter Bianco. A little bit of orange blossom simple syrup topped off with soda water and a rose water spritz and a flower.
So it sounds like it was super simple. You didn't work really hard on it.
Nope.
And that's how you got to Italy.
All right. Well, everybody go to Allegory and get an education and try all these drinks. They're fabulous.
Yes, right. And after the class, we'll be at Reliable Tavern for a little happy hour around like 7.
All right. Now we're going to switch you out and put Reed in that chair. And I would hope that a chef whose last name is Giannini would be happy to hear Italy getting some props here. I mean, a few, apparently.
Can we get to Reed, please?
Reed. So speaking of looking people in the eye and getting their names and all of that, you opened a restaurant called Chilling Candy Company down in the Yards. And one of the things you do that you were talking before the show is you make sure you get everybody's name when they come in so the server isn't just saying sir or ma'am. I like that.
Yeah, I think that's part of genuine hospitality, right? That's what we go for at Chilling Candy Company every day is making people feel part of our family, you know, our restaurant.
Well, let's back up a little bit. So you have a really impressive resume. So can we go through it a little bit for people who may not be familiar with you?
Sure.
So you got into cooking because of your family. Like you wrote in your bio, you got your car and you went right to a restaurant and was like, I want to work here. But then your travels took you to some pretty...
Well, you went to the CIA, you worked for Thomas Keller, not bad.
Yeah, not bad. I've been pretty fortunate in my career to work for some really great chefs and mentors and still kind of surround myself with a lot of great people in our kitchen, in our restaurant.
But were there things that you took, like where would you say you went in opening Chilling? Were there things that you took from different chefs that you're like, I definitely want this, I don't want that. These are the things that I want in my own place.
I think, you know, I've been in this business for 21 years, mm-hmm. right?
Okay,
and
you
I
look
think,
like you're 10.
I was going to say, did you start 6 months before you were right. conceived?
thank you. I appreciate that. No, I think, you know, anyone who's is doing well in this business, it does so because they're a sponge, right? And they learn from wherever they go and whoever they meet and whatever they see, and they absorb all of these things. And you kind of just stockpile them in your memory for, I like that, I didn't like that, that's really neat, that's really creative, and you hold on to these things. And then when you need to reach into your bag of tricks, all of those things are there and build who you are, you know, not only as a chef, but also, you know, as a person, as a leader, as a mentor.
Well, when you were putting together the menu for Chilling Canning, I mean— Since I have eaten there and David has not, you know, there's a real...
Maybe I have.
No, you haven't. There's clearly a point of view on the menu and in your cocktail program and on your wine list. So how would you best explain that to people?
You know, our menu is driven by locality, right? It's what's available. It's the season. It's not, you know, we change the menu every day, right? And the concept
itself... Which is really
itself,
hard to do.
Yeah, it's... There's a lot of work that goes into that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we source our ingredients from 30 or 40 different farmers, purveyors, fishermen that are all local here to the Chesapeake region. Once we get those ingredients in-house, then we figure out what to do with it. So the week will start and we'll get, a load from, you know, each farm brings on a different day, right? And so we'll have their produce in our cooler, and then we figure out, you know, what do we do with these turnips? What do we do with this kale or this variety of kale, and where would this best be utilized? And proteins, not just vegetables, but also proteins, and how do we highlight this ingredient and really show it off?
Well, okay. Your wife Sarah is sitting next to me, and I want to know what your role with the restaurant is. Besides telling Reed what to do.
Thank you.
Because you're married.
Well, and they have a little one. They have a baby.
Yeah. We do. So I'm a partner in the business, and I'm the director of business development. So I kind of wear a little bit of different hats each day. You know, if there's somebody that really needs me, I will be on the floor. I will help in the kitchen. I will help run the dining room. But mostly, you know, my job is to oversee, like, just the big picture of where we want to go with the restaurant. How do we want to, you know, manage our HR, our finances, our marketing? Just looking at how
it's
do we
the
want
the unsexy part of the restaurant business that you're dealing with.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah. It's right. It's more of like the administrative end of it. But you know, it's so important, especially being small business owners and a husband and wife duo. Just, you know, we don't have other people doing that, and somebody has to take on that task.
Well, good for you for doing that.
Thank you.
Yes, go ahead.
Well, what about desserts? Are you doing your own desserts, or do you have a pastry chef there?
Everything that we sell, we make. Everything. Cool. Whether it's breads or desserts or sausages or all of it. We make all of it in-house.
That's beautiful.
That's quite a commitment.
You
That's
sleep?
A lot of work.
You got a kid, too. Do you ever sleep?
I get home. I get in bed somewhere between 1 and 2 usually, and my daughter wakes me up. Maybe it's 3, maybe it's 5, maybe it's 6
we have
or
a puppy.
7
we
if
understand.
I'm lucky. So it depends on the day.
But you do have sort of the centerpiece of the restaurant is that massive, I don't know if it's a wood-burning stove. What is it?
Yeah, so it's a wood-burning oven.
It's gorgeous.
Thank you. Yeah, that's a really neat thing. The parts itself, they come from Italy. The oven's manufactured in Healdsburg, California, which is, you know, an area of the country that's true to both Sarah and I. And so it's manufactured over there by a company called Munaini. They shipped it over here. And then I had the same guys that did the copper dome on the Library of Congress hand clad our oven. It took two of them 3 weeks to do. So it's essentially
stunning.
It's a sculpture.
It well, really is.
Let's make sure everybody knows where the restaurant is down at the Yards.
Yeah, we're in the Yards right in Yards Park. That's 360 Water Street Southeast, in between 4th and 3rd on Water Street.
And you do dinner?
We do dinner Tuesday through Saturday, and then we do brunch on Sunday. So that's 5 p.m. to 10 p.m., Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and then Sunday we are 11 to 8, and we run both the full menu and the brunch card all day on Sunday.
Okay. Cool. And you have is the outdoor patio still open, or is it just weather?
We have some heaters
really
out.
Pretty.
We have some heaters out there, and so if you're willing, we're willing, and we can get some hot toddies, if you will, out there for you all as well.
She talks a big game. Yes. All right, guys, thanks
Thank
very
you.
Much.
Thank you so
now
much.
Now we're gonna swap you out.
Days.
And
yes.
Bring our friends in from King Bird at the Watergate. Christian Welsh and Sebastian Giannini are the two chefs there.
Yes.
And we mentioned at the top of the show that pâté en croûte is a French specialty, a French delicacy. And usually in the competitions, I guess it's fair to say that a Frenchman wins. Is that usually what happens?
I think we should start before that.
Normally, yes.
Yes,
there
yes,
are
sorry,
pâté en croûte competitions. I mean, is that something that, do you know what I mean? Like, do the French just compete over everything?
Yes, in culinary part, yes. Everything.
So right, how did you all get involved in this?
We have a proposition from D'Artagnan, you know, end of September, probably 3 days before the end of the date to submit all of the folder. And we say, why not, you know, just before to went on vacation in France. We use some recipe, you know, of my grandmother and the whole competition of the Bocuse d'Or. And we say, Christian, you can do this, you know, the biggest talent we have at the restaurant.
Okay,
now.
I feel like while everybody's listening to this segment, you should come over here and get some pâté en croûte. So you should all try it while we're discussing it. So what is pâté en croûte?
Pâté en croûte, you have, you know, three qualities to serve this. First of all, it needs to be croustillant, the base, you know, need to be amazing. Second of all, you need to have pistachio. And after, you know, you need to have a gelée clarified. To be sure it's nice, melting, and for sure the test. This is why the three ingredients, when they are united, is good for us.
So this is your grandmother's recipe?
The inside, yeah. The inside, you know, it's the story about the veal ossobuco, you know, she made for me a long time ago and often. And the two sides, you know, we present for the competition. We have a small tartelette with a pearl onion and potatoes, you know, cooked on the turmeric, you know, with savora mustard, chives, shallots. I used to doing this, you know, 12 years ago for a dish, you know, a scallops dish, and I present this for the Bocuse d'Or, and we reuse this, you know.
Sure.
Well, I want to ask Christian, correct?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Sir.
Can't don't call him sir.
You're going to make me feel old. I'll have to kill myself. So had you ever made pâté en croûte before?
So, no. In terms of charcuterie and its own, I've never made pâté croûte.
So were you intimidated when chefs said, hey, we're going to be competing?
Not so much intimidated, more excited for the fact that I was actually able to actually put my hands on it, grasp the idea of it, work with it, figure out how I'm going to make it work, really.
You know? So how long did it take for you to get
I'm still working. It's not, I don't think it's perfect at all by any means. But
because you're a true artist. But I mean, how
but
long?
For people who don't know,
yeah.
Let's talk about the process.
Yes.
Like developing the pastry.
Yes.
And then the meats that go inside and so then the gelée. Because it's so complicated.
Yeah, it's steps, yes. Mm-hmm. So the pastry is the simplest part of it. It's just putting some flour and some butter and some water and some eggs together.
Is there rye in this?
There is none. There is none.
Okay.
What you're probably tasting is the fennel pollen that goes inside.
That must be it.
Yes.
Okay.
And really just to let the dough rest. And then I section it out to shape it toward the sides of the walls that encase the pâté and then the base and the top.
Okay.
The most tiring process is actually the farce, the meat, the inside, because there's different portions. There's different proteins. There's obviously mostly veal ossobuco, but there's a little bit of pork. But again, it gets salted. It gets marinated.
Hold on. I have to cut you off. Sorry, we missed our commercial break. We'll be right back with you. This is David and Nikki Nellis. We are digging into pâté en croûte, and it is delicious. We'll be back in just a sec.
All right, we're back on Fooding the Beast with David and Nikki Nellis. Quickly, before we get back to the show, I just want to thank all our sponsors, Hakan Ilhan's Mirabelle, Ottoman Taverna, his Italian eateries, Alba Osteria and Al Dente, and now open in Georgetown, Brasserie Liberté. Our friends at ProFish, the finest sustainable seafood there is, Ivy City Smokehouse, Meat Crafters, and Central Farm Markets. Thanks for sponsoring the show. If you're not a sponsor, shame on you. Shame on you. All you got to do is get in touch.
Yes.
All right. So, Shep, let's get back to you. Let's talk about this process that you had to go through to create an award-winning dish in 3 days, right?
Mm-hmm. Ossobuco, like, how did we put the meats together?
The meats get deboned they come in whole. Mm-hmm. Ossobuco is shank, right? So
right.
We get whole shanks and I clean them. We get pork shoulder and I clean them. So they come in big pieces and then I break it down to smaller pieces and then it gets salted and marinated overnight.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one process. And then it gets shaped the next day and then baked. That's another process.
Is there anything
process.
Special about that process, the salting? I mean,
It sounds too easy. It's a specific salt that helps us preserve meat and obviously the color of the meat. It stays pink like we would see a normal piece of pork when it comes in.
Mm-hmm.
It retains its color, so it's very bright and vibrant. If we didn't, then it's very blonde and almost like if we've cooked it over the fire.
So then how is the gelatin set?
So the gelatin is veal stock, and then I take all the bones that we've gotten from our whole proteins, and I roast them with butter.
So this is like a collagen shot. Is that what you're telling me?
Yeah, it's kind of.
Cameron should be rubbing it on her face.
I'll start injecting it.
So the bones get roasted, and then they get fortified with the stock until it reduces down and has an enhanced flavor of veal.
Mm-hmm.
And then it gets paired with the actual marinade from the proteins itself.
Mm-hmm.
And then I bring it back to a boil, and then I actually clarify it in a specific way and then cool it down. And then, again, after the whole cooking process and it's cooled, I flood the gelatin inside the pâté, and it sets overnight again. So it firms up.
Mm-hmm.
And
but it just leaves such a beautiful layer right under the crust. It's
exactly,
so pretty.
Yes.
So let me ask about the competition. Do you fly somewhere and do all this there, or do you submit? How do you do that?
So, again, we submitted a profile, and we fortunately got accepted the last minute. And now, again, yes, we will fly to Nice, and we'll stay there. And I will pick my merchandise when we get to Nice and then travel to Lyon for the competition on the 2nd.
And so this is for the world title, right?
Yes.
So right now you're the
North American.
North American. That's amazing. Wow. Congratulations.
Well.
So, Chef, how does this help you with the restaurant? Like, are you going to serve this now? What is it going to do?
Yeah, we serve this, you know, just one pâté per day, you know, for 8 wonderful guests, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Just this, not more, because this is
like it should be on, like, a Thanksgiving table.
It's part of the training, you know, until the 2nd of December when we arrive for the competition.
Okay. Wait, so when is the competition?
2nd of December.
Okay.
And how many chefs participate in that?
16. 16, you know, in Lyon, you know, the big garage of, you know, Tain L'Hermitage of Michel Chapoutier, the wine producer. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's we'll see, you know, we're ravenous in my hometown,
that's,
you know.
Terrible. And, I feel like you need, like, we'll a see. Media group to go
we
with
We should be
you
with you.
To, like, you can.
Supporting you. Giving a blow-by-blow, like, what's happening. Could be like sportscasters of the Pate.
And I would like to. Last time I was in Nice, I had a backpack on, so I would like to go first class.
Don't
this
even
time.
Make him tell that story, please.
It's not. I wasn't in Nice when that happened. Okay, but good. Anyways, so the other contestants are. Is the majority?
Yeah, you have nine contestants. So you know they are French.
They're all French.
Yes, all French. And after the other one, we have Asia Pacifica, and we have North America. North America, the champion, Christian. Mm-hmm. And the number two, you know, a chef of Alain Ducasse in New York. But the night competitor, you know what is interesting? You have the chef of the George V in Paris. Mm. You know, it's Ange Lelièvre, you know, and you have the chef of the French president, you know, Guillaume Gomez, for example. You have the chef of the Moulin Rouge, David Lequelec, you know, nice and big name, you know, and... I'm very proud, you know.
Well, you can be the rookie that goes in
candidate.
And kicks some ass, can't you?
I'm hoping for that.
That'll be great.
Well, it's delicious.
Thank you so much.
Congratulations on your winning so far, and we're all behind you.
Thank you
with
so
your
much.
Trip after
Thank you.
And let's not forget to mention Kingbird. We had a meal there not long ago, a couple of months ago, that was spectacular.
It was lovely. So. Always good.
Thank you. Thank
yes,
you.
All right. So thank you both so much for being in.
Guys, thanks. All right. Paul, step back up to the plate there, and let's just make sure everybody knows kind of the full tilt on the Good Life Behind Bars and what to expect and
the
dates.
And how long it's going on for and everything.
Yeah, absolutely. I just want to say thanks for having us. We are going to be doing it through December, and that's going to be at Allegory at the Eaton Hotel. We're on 12th and K Northwest, right downtown. You can find all of the educational tickets on Eventbrite.
How many educational tickets are there? Like, how many events are you doing?
So we just recently did Dwayne Sylvester last Sunday. It was amazing.
He's been a guest a couple
of
times.
We know Dwayne
really well. He's great. Yeah. Right. Beautiful turnout. We actually have Capri going on tonight, which is going to be a great turnout
Capri!
As well. That's going to be from 5:30 to 7. Mm-hmm. It's going to feature a few, like 2 to 3 different drinks, some snacks, and then Capri's got a really amazing lecture that she's going to give. We could still get a few tickets on Eventbrite.
Okay.
And then we're going to feature Lauren Paler from Dos Mommies and Pom Pom on December 1st. She's awesome. One of my old mentors. She's great. December 8th, we're going to have Al. And then afterwards, we're going to be meeting, after Capri's class and Al's class, we're going to be meeting for drinks at Reliable Tavern tonight and then at Hanuman after Al's
what
class.
What a novel idea. Drinks followed by drinks.
We didn't say where Hanuman
you know.
Is.
It's like a pregame, educational
Hanuman
pregame.
Is. Can you tell everybody where Hanuman is?
So Hanuman is at 1604 7th Street Northwest.
Okay.
So 7th and Q, Shaw.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Just look up the best and you'll find it.
Right.
And then we're also going to be having AJ.
Who we know really well.
Yeah. She's amazing.
She's amazing.
The best.
Because she was behind
DMB Black Restaurant
yes,
Week.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, she's actually like, they've been a really great
AJ's a force,
and,
too.
Yeah, she's amazing. She's got like more hours in the day than most of us do. I don't know how she does it.
I don't know how she does it, right.
But her class is going to be on the 15th. And if you want to know more information, you can follow all of us on social media. So at Allegory DC. At Hanuman, at Chocolate City's Best, at DMV Black Restaurant Week.
Or at Nikki Nellis.
Yep.
Steal her thunder.
You
better watch. Thanks again, guys. Appreciate it.
All right. Well, unfortunately, the show's almost over. Everything you heard about the show today, not to steal your thunder, but you can find on the list, areyouonit.com, Nikki's website. Follow Nikki on Instagram, on Twitter, on YouTube.
How about letting me take
on
that?
On Facebook.
Okay.
Follow her
so
everywhere.
So you can follow me at NYCCINELLIS on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We always post everything that's going on, not just in the Foodie and the Beast studio, but also on our Industry Night studio. So earlier this week, I had the pleasure of speaking with the authors of The New Joy of Cooking, and that is up right now on fullserviceradio.org. And tomorrow, I am so excited because Lydia Bastinanich is in D.C., and she is coming in the Industry Night studio. So we'll be talking about Felidia, her latest book, and obviously her cooking over the last 50 years. Tune in here, obviously, next week. We'll be back in studio. We want to thank all of our guests for coming in today. It was a
show.
Full studio. Lots of booze, lots of food, lots of good news, all of which you can use with your regular going out in the D.C. metro area. I want to thank all my guests again for joining us in studio, and everybody else, please have a delicious week.